This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We'll talk some football with Sam Fortier, but we are going to start with Sam, who joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, at Sam, the number 4TR on X on Twitter, with this story that he and Aaron Cox and Megan Flynn and Paul Kane from the Washington Post reported yesterday. And Sam, give me 30 seconds here to just get to the point in which you guys were writing about, just for clarification purposes for everybody. I think a lot of people know this, but the RFK site bill, which would clear the way for the city to own that land and be able to do with it what they want to do with it, it passed in the House much earlier this year. It passed very recently, as in a few weeks ago, in the Senate subcommittee, and now it needs to pass in the Senate overall. And if it does, the city has control of the land for the next 99 years. They can negotiate with the team and potentially bring the football team back to Washington. Now, if it doesn't pass in the Senate soon, and it appears as if there will not be a standalone vote on this, it needs to be attached to an existing bill as a rider. If it doesn't happen in the next week or so, it's not going to happen with this Congress, and then we have to wait until 2025, as in, you know, middle of January and beyond, when the new Congress moves in. So with that as kind of the update, and you can tell me if I missed out on anything, that's where it stood prior to your reporting yesterday, which was pretty wild. And from there, I'll let you update everybody on what you guys reported.
Kevin, that was a beautiful summary, man. Like, you nailed every note of, like, what people needed to know going into yesterday. I appreciate that. So basically, like, what we reported yesterday is that Maryland, like, because it doesn't get a standalone hearing, it needs to be attached to one of the bigger bills. Like you said, political people compare these bigger bills to Christmas trees. And so people are going to just throw unrelated bills. They're going to throw ornaments on these bigger bills as they pass through. The one they're talking about is the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA. And basically, to get on one of those bills, you need approval from all four corners of leadership, as they're called. So the leaders of the House and the leaders of the Senate. And basically, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is, you know, was kind of running point on this. And the Maryland senators went to him and said, hey, like, we oppose this bill. And before, like, they view giving D.C. this land and allowing them to, you know, develop a football team, they feel like that gives them a football stadium, potentially, that gives them an unfair advantage in this competition to land the Commanders' next stadium. So they expressed some concerns. Schumer said, okay, like, you know, basically our understanding is Schumer said, well, what's it going to take? And then the Maryland senators outlined three things that they want. They want a statement from the Commanders about where their preference is to play. They want this is the biggest one. They want assurances about what is going to happen, what the Commanders are going to do with the current Northwest Stadium site. You know, what's your plan to replace it? They fear, you know, happening to them what has happened to RFK Stadium site. And the third one, which we talked about that you teed up, is they want a fighter squadron, a squadron of jets from D.C.'s Air National Guard to be transferred to Maryland.
Yeah, that's the part that really, I think, you know, was out of nowhere, and you guys reported it. And so I, do you mind explaining kind of the National Guard Air Squadron situation in Maryland and in D.C. and why Chris Van Hollen and Cardin want this as part of those three things that will, you know, sort of enable them to vote for it?
Yeah, and I think one important clarification, we reported that Cardin has been the one who's emphasized the jet in these discussions previously. Basically, in March, the Air Force decided to transition the Maryland, combat wing to a, quote, cyber ground unit. What exactly that means is a little bit beyond me. I was relying on my colleagues. But basically, you know, they're taking their planes out of the sky. And so Maryland has said, you know, they would be the only state in the country where that's the case. And so they said, hey, like, we want some jets. So back in April, actually, they sent a letter, you know, to a top military official basically being like, hey, we want those jets. They checked in with D.C., responded basically being like, hey, like, we are not cool with that. We think that that would really gut our Air National Guard. We think that would make, you know, people in the nation's capital less safe, less able to defend ourselves if we were to come under attack. And so we're out. And, you know, the top military official said, yep, okay, cool. Like, I need you guys to agree before we transfer anything. So it's been stuck there since April. And so this is the Maryland senators, you know, trying to go back and say, hey, you know, like, now we would still like those jets. I think it's important for people to know that D.C.'s fighter squadron is headquartered at Joint Base Andrews. So it's technically in Andrews. Maryland, but D.C. Andrews, yeah. But it's controlled by D.C. So basically Maryland wants control over these jets.
Do the D.C. National Guard Air Squadron, do these jets basically protect the DMV or just D.C.?
I
know I'm getting sidetracked here. I mean, I understand this is a desire. I'm just actually curious because, you know, obviously those of us that were here on 9/11 remember these fighter jets flying in the skies for, by the way, days, if not weeks following 9/11, all over the area, you know, Maryland, Virginia, D.C. I'm just curious if the F-16s in D.C. are also responsible for protecting Maryland and Virginia, or at least the suburbs of D.C.?
Yeah, I'm unclear on that, but I just know that, like, I think that Eleanor Holmes Norton's concern is if that were to ever happen again, if there were an air threat, you now have to make at least one additional call, right? You would have to call Maryland or Virginia and say, hey, like, can we get some planes in the sky right now? And I think that anytime you start introducing, like, you know, layers to that, like, it reduces the speed at which you can get, you know, planes in the air, which, you know, every second would be critical at that point.
You guys did such a good job, and I read through the entire thing. There was one question that I had that I don't think was answered in there, and maybe it's not, you know, a question that makes much sense, but I'll ask it anyway. Why do two Maryland senators have this much control over this being attached to this NDAA, you know, National Defense Bill?
So, good question. Basically, if you're going to attach something to a bigger bill like this, you need sign off from all four corners of leadership. And Chuck Schumer, as a Senate Majority Leader, is thinking, you know, at least for the rest of this Congress, is thinking, hey, like, I need everything to go, you know, smoothly. I need all my votes. I need all my caucus to be, you know, kind of coalesce together. In Maryland, two members of his caucus, two votes for him, are saying, hey, like, we have a problem with this thing. And so he, you know, Chuck Schumer's office told us yesterday, like, the Maryland senators and the commanders need to have an agreement before he will support adding this bill to the rider. If this had come up, or the bigger bill, if this had come up in a Senate, you know, a floor hearing, then it's a roll call vote. You know, two votes aren't going to stop it. It's had broad bipartisan support in the places you mentioned earlier. But because there's not time, they need to attach it to a bigger thing. The four corners of leadership play really big roles, and so Maryland is pressing on that corner of leadership.
Because of the time sensitivity here, you know, with this lame duck Congress, I mean, is it fair to look back on maybe the two Maryland senators, but maybe more so Steve Daines, as to, you know, their resistance to this held it up in the subcommittee? Because if this had been approved in the subcommittee much sooner, it could have been, right, presented as a standalone vote where simple majority would have passed it.
I think that's a very fair theory to have. I mean, they started lobbying, you know, top House officials on this in, like, you know, early 2023, right? This has been a 2-year process. And, even in March of this year, like, I had people, you know, at least the people that I talked to on the Hill saying, like, yeah, like, even if this thing passes really soon, it's just not really how business gets done in the Senate anymore. Like, you're still going to need to get attached at the end of the year. But there was at least some optimism, like, hey, we can do this through what's called regular order. Like, we can get a vote on the floor and it'll be fine. So I think it's not guaranteed that would have gone down that way. But Steve Daines definitely delayed it and set it up to be, you know, kind of they're at the goal line, but the clock's ticking down and they really have to make this happen now.
All right, we're talking to Sam Fortier from the Washington Post about the story that he and several others at the Washington Post wrote yesterday about Chris Van Hollen and Ben Cardin, who is an outgoing senator. But do we have any idea? I'm assuming that Angela Alsobrooks probably feels the exact same way they do. I mean, it's not relevant right now, but I'm assuming that she does.
Before her election, she told the Baltimore Sun editorial board, I forget the exact quote, but it was something like, I'm really looking forward to, you know, battling Mayor Muriel Bowser over the stadium.
Got it. Okay, so so here we are, right? And you've mentioned they want three things. These two Maryland senators want three things. They want the team to announce their intentions, essentially, is I think what you said and what you guys wrote. They want, you know, an idea of what's going to be done with FedEx, with Northwest Stadium, with the land over site, which, by the way, that land the team owns, if they were to move from that site. And they want this fighter squadron, this National Air Guard fighter squadron. So did you, when you laid out these things, are they non-negotiable? Or if they get two of the three, let's say the plan for the land oversight and an announcement of their intentions, which, by the way, to me would mean the team would lose some leverage in their negotiations, quite honestly. I don't know why they would do that. But tell me the state of, you know, what they would need to get for this to be attached to that national defense bill and for them to vote for it.
I think the commanders are trying to figure that out right now, right? Like, you know, what is serious? I know that Maryland's most important thing, the biggest thing that they want, is assurances about what would happen at the land oversight. And so I think, like, if I'm the commanders, that's the thing I'm most focused on, is like formalizing or finding a plan that's satisfying to Maryland about, hey, like, because Maryland is going to develop that area. They've already approved $400 million to help develop the Blue Line corridor in that area. And so, like, I think that a mixed-use development anchored by a stadium would be a big part of that for them. But if they can't have that, okay, what are the other options? Is it the business, you know, is it football HQ? Is it business side? Is it other things? Like, you got to figure out what exactly that looks like. And so, to me, that's the biggest one. But are the other two negotiable? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's... What are the number of days left to get this attached and voted on in terms of working days in Congress before they break for good?
Well, it's tough because, like, they could always go to overtime, but the target date to adjourn Congress this year is December 20th. And I've had different people tell me different days. Oh, this day is the day that, you know, it's the deadline to do it. This day is the deadline to do it. But really, the answer is, like, if they adjourn on December 20th, I mean, they have until 12:01 a.m. basically on these deadlines, because all it takes is one corner of leadership to say, oh, this is in or this is out, or, you know, like this thing could change up until the very last minute. So NDAA, they probably want to pass before the federal spending bill, which is, you know, the other must-pass bill that they have this year. So there's not an exact date, but certainly December 20th is a big date in everyone's minds because that's when they want to adjourn.
The last day they can throw the ornament on the tree. Sam Fortier joining us. So let's jump ahead. If it does get done, you know, whatever number of these three things that they are looking to get from, you know, to vote yes, Van Hollen and Cardin, if it does pass and it gets attached as a rider, talk about just for a moment the fact that it's still not a done deal that they end up in D.C. There's still a negotiation to be had. There's a city council, et cetera, involved. You know, from that standpoint or from that moment, when it if it does pass, tell everybody what needs to happen and the likelihood that it would that they'd come to a deal.
With the city, you mean?
Yeah, they would agree on an acceptable deal, both parties, Harris and the team and the city, with the council approving.
Yeah, that it's really hard to handicap it. I think that, like, right now, all of D.C. is saying, you know, hey, like, we need the land. Like, step one is get us the land, and then let's fight about it. So even the members of the council who have been strongly opposed to using taxpayer funds for a stadium so far, Council Chairman Phil Mendelson, Charles Allen, like whose ward touches that area, like they have both been really strong opponents about using that land for a football stadium, especially with taxpayer funds. But they say, hey, we need to get the land. So it's really hard to handicap where the council's at, because Kevin, if you remember, like the baseball deal passed 7-6 with three lame ducks supporting it,
right?
And like it just went back and forth. It's really hard to say, like, where's the council at? But that said, the Commanders are poised to, like, start doing that. They hired a lobbying firm for the council. And if this thing does go, like, they're going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, I think you pointed something out that's important. The council wants this to pass, but then, it's because they'd love to have control of the land. If it's not a stadium, it could still be developed. They don't want the eyesore of RFK Stadium, the old one, sitting on that land. There would be a lot of use for that land, even if it isn't a stadium. So let's go to worst case. It doesn't get attached to this rider, so it doesn't pass, and we have to wait until a new Congress comes in January of 2025. Is it legitimately like starting all over?
You have to say, hey, is James Comer willing to sponsor this legislation? Is he willing to fight this hard? Like, basically, Kevin, if this doesn't pass by the end of this year, like, they're back to square one. And I think that they would have it would be a very interesting and challenging decision for Josh Harris and his group, because if you look at the three jurisdictions right now, the only jurisdiction with a solidified site and the ability to offer public funding is Maryland.
Right.
But, so you could do a deal anytime there if you wanted to. If you just want to say, hey, like, we tried really hard in the other jurisdictions, it just didn't work out, we're going to Maryland, I would be surprised if they did that. But at the same time, if you want to open a stadium by 2030, if you want to start, getting more return on your investment with all your minority partners, like, that's something that you could consider. If you didn't want to do that, you would then have to start political processes in D.C. and in Virginia. Again, in Virginia, I think pretty clearly with the monumental thing, like, is pretty opposed to subsidies for stadiums. Our polling has shown that. And in D.C., you have to think to yourself, like, this RFK bill they've been talking about the team coming back to the city. Snyder started talking to the mayor about it in 2008. And, like, this is the furthest they've ever gone. This is the closest they've ever come. By far. And so this is a 2-year process. Is Josh Harris and his group really willing to wait 2 more years? Or,
right,
could you make an appeal to the Trump administration? Like, there's just a lot of uncertainty about what this next Congress, what this next version of government is going to look like. And so it would be a really fascinating decision to see what Josh would do.
Not to mention, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a Republican Congress, the feeling among a lot of Republican leaders is that they don't want to give away that land, right? They want it paid for.
So here's I think different political analysts and different people with agendas here would tell you different things. But yeah, I think that, like, Trump has been as antagonistic about D.C. home rule and self-governance than any president in modern history, I think our paper reported. But at the same time, like, several people have argued to me, and I think fairly so, like, the RFK bill is actually a Republican bill. It's more Republican than it is Democrat.
Comer.
James Comer, you know, the head of the House Oversight Committee, he was the one that sponsored it. They've gotten a lot of positive feedback. Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, came out and supported it today. Like, development of land, like, using private development on land that would otherwise be run by the government is a Republican talking point. And so it's really hard for me to know, like, where the truth is. But certainly I think there's a case to be made for and against, you know, doing this in the next administration.
I'm not going to ask you to handicap it because I know how much you hate when I ask you to handicap things. But I think you made the most important point, and that is if it doesn't get done in the next couple of weeks, you're talking about adding years, plural, onto the process, potentially. I'm not saying it would be a lock. Maybe they could get it wrapped up quickly with the new Congress. And then all of a sudden, Maryland just is sitting there. They own the land. There's already dollars earmarked. Maryland wants it, and it just becomes the path of least resistance to a stadium opening in 2030 rather than 2031 or 2032.
Right. And I think that would be the biggest test of Josh Harris's ownership so far, because he's still in the honeymoon period, right? Like, this team's good. They found a franchise quarterback. Like, they've, you know, redone football ops. They're, you know, they hired a team president yesterday. They're redoing business ops. Like, you know, they're, you know, more powerful people are coming back to the owner's box. Like, he is rebuilding this thing in a lot of ways. But if this does not work out, he then has to make a decision, like, do I go to Maryland where our polling says people don't necessarily want them to go, they want them to be the RFK? Is he, you know, would he then make an appeal to the Trump White House? You know, Josh Harris advised the first Trump administration on infrastructure. Jared Kushner talked about a potential role in the administration. He has ties to it, but at the same time, like, how close do you want to get to a guy who's pretty unpredictable? So how much do you want to, you know, of your faith do you want to put in his hands? I think it would just be a fascinating position for Josh to be in.
All right. Let's get a football question here or two in, and I appreciate the time as always. So we're at the bye week. They got a much needed win. I discussed it, Sam, in a way which it wasn't just a win. It was like a changing of the vibe back to where it was three and a half weeks ago with the offensive performance in particular. So it felt good too. You know, it wasn't a 13-10 squeaker. You know, they rolled up 460 some odd yards and scored 42 points and should have scored 48 against a good defense. So, you know, looking at these final four and the landscape of the NFC, what do you think this team is capable of doing the rest of the way?
The odds-on favorite right now, I think, is that they get the seventh seed and got to go to Detroit or Philly. And I think if you go to Detroit, I think that's going to be a really tough battle. If you go to Philly, maybe it's better because you have familiarity. They're kind of rolling right now. But I think it's possible that they could sneak to the sixth, you know, if Green Bay falls a little bit.
Right.
And really, like, I think the only thing – The greatest case for them missing the playoffs, which I don't think they'll do, but it's possible, is if Atlanta, you know, if Tampa Bay can take the lead in the South, and then, you know, Atlanta kind of gets hot, because I do think they're capable of that, even though I know Kirk did not look good the other day, and he did not have the zip on his ball. But I like, to me, that's kind of the perfect storm where they miss the playoffs.
Yeah, that would be. Last one. What do you feel good about right now as it relates to the team that we're watching now? I'm not talking about the future, the organization. We feel good about a lot of those things. And then what still concerns you about this team?
What made me feel best, I think, watching the tape back from Sunday's win is the way the offensive line played, particularly like when they got out and moved and could flatten people in the run game. Like, I was talking to Sam Cosmi in the locker room on
counter. We losing, like, Sam?
Oh, can you hear
we
me?
We got him back. Hello? I got you now. You were breaking up a little bit.
Okay. I mean, when you watch that first Brian Robinson touchdown run and the backside guard and the backside tackle pull and get out in space and hit people, like, that Sam Cosmi said, that's what we want to do. Like, that's who we are. That'll, you know, we're staying ahead of the chain. We're getting out, you know, in space and hitting people and using our tempo to our advantage, and they're tired and we're not. Like, that's what this offense was, and they need to do that. And I think Tennessee's defense was pretty good, so I feel good about that. The questions that I still have, I would probably, in the same vein, I would probably say, like, the execution from the running backs and the receivers, particularly because, you know, we've seen a huge uptick in drops over that skid, especially and with the running backs. Like, Brian Robinson's great, don't get me wrong, but if you're not going to have Austin Ekeler back, can Chris Rodriguez and Jeremy Maynickles continue playing at the level they've played at? I think it's possible, but I think it's far from guaranteed. And, you know, if you have those drops, if you have those, you know, mis-executions, if you're not as talented and you're not staying ahead of the chains, like, this offense can certainly go in the tank. And so,
yeah,
I would say that's my concern.
Thanks for doing this, as always. Really good job on the reporting. Wild report, actually. Out of nowhere. Really interesting. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me.
Yep. We had Sam's phone breaking up there a little bit at the end, but Sam's always awesome. I mean, Tommy reported, you know, 2 months ago at this point, that the real concern among people with the team were the Maryland Senators, specifically Chris Van Hollen. I think Tommy was the first to report that, you know, 2 months ago now. But the National Guard Air Squadron being part of a transaction for a yes vote, pretty wild. I also think that, I mean, I could be completely wrong about this, but I don't see the team, you know, making a public announcement about what their intentions are. That's losing leverage in negotiations with Maryland and D.C. I don't think Virginia's a part of this, but I don't see a Josh Harris saying, yeah, sure, we're going to tell everybody exactly what we're planning on doing here. But certainly what to do with that land in Landover, I think that is something that, if I were still a Maryland resident, I would want to know from the team that's going to move into the city, what are you going to do with that? That can't be left as an eyesore for the next 20, you know, 8 years or 27 years. And they've got a lot of money, the state does, earmarked for the surrounding areas of Northwest Stadium, of FedEx Field in Landover. That makes sense to me. I don't know about the F-16s or the announcement of intentions. We'll see. They've got a little bit more time. If this doesn't get attached to that national defense bill, then the odds become quickly and move quickly in favor in a major way of the stadium staying right where it is and being built right next to the existing one and opening sometime in 2029 or 2030. It's got to get done here in the next few weeks, you would think. All right, Denton's News when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, Denton, what do you got?
I think we got to start with the Wizards. 15 in a row, and not in the good column. They got crushed by Cleveland. They had like four dudes score 13 points.
Did they advance in the in-season cup play?
They were the first team eliminated in the in-season cup play, which I think that should be a trophy of its own.
I don't know if people realize this, but in their 15-game losing skid after they started 2-2, they remember they beat the Hawks in back-to-back games all the way back before Halloween, that only one of these 15 losses, only one of them, was a less than 10-point outcome, and that was a 9-point loss to San Antonio. Every other loss has been double digits, like they haven't been competitive. Look, this is what we, as and I am a longtime Bullets Wizards fan, This is what we signed up for. I signed up for it. I'm fine with this. We knew that this was going to be a bad basketball team, and it kind of needs to be. It needs to be a team that finishes in that bottom three and has, along with the other two, you know, of the three worst teams in the league, has that, you know, 14% chance to land at number one when we get to the drawing for the first pick in the draft. This is a very important draft. I know that some of you have talked about the kid from Rutgers and a couple of the other players. What I've seen from Cooper Flagg so far this year, he's going to be the number one pick. And, you know, I'm not going to put him into the Wembanyama category or the LeBron category necessarily, but he is going to be at a much higher category than Washington had chances for, legitimate chances for previously, like this last draft, or even the John Wall draft. I mean, Wall was the consensus number one, but he wasn't considered a potential transcendent player. Cooper Flagg is, and Washington needs to land on that number one pick. This is a loaded draft at the top, people think, all right, right now. And this is the process, man. You know, get used to it, because if they do contend, if they do draft well, and they do end up contending, we're talking about 4 or 5 years from now. There are another 2 to 3 painful seasons before the draft picks that they've started to select with Coulibaly and continued this year with Carrington and Saar, et cetera, George, et cetera, and will continue next year before they start to weed out the ones that can really play, and those guys start to get into their early 20s where they have physically matured, mentally matured, and you can start to play competitive basketball with them. They're horrendous. I mean, this is a team that right now appears to be worse than last year's team. They are by far and away the worst team in the NBA after this 15-game losing streak at 2-17. I mean, they're 3 games behind the Sixers, who are the second worst team, Josh Harris's team. They are not thrilled with Josh Harris in Philadelphia, Sixer fans. I have some relatives who are Philly, Jersey people, Sixer fans, Eagle fans, and there were several conversations over the holiday weekend about Josh Harris. They're not big Harris fans in Philly. I think his preference in terms of the teams he owns is this one, because this is where he's from. But yeah, they're bad. What's next?
Yeah, they are really bad. By the way, that one game that you mentioned where they lost by 9 points, that's when Victor Wembanyama had 50.
That was 50 from Wembanyama. By the way, I did watch some hoops last night. I watched Clemson beat Kentucky, and then I watched last night Jokic put on a fourth quarter show last night. They came back to beat Denver. They were down by 9. They won 119-115. Jokic ended up with 38. I think 17 of his 38 were in the fourth quarter. What does he have? He's got 3 MVPs, right?
Yes, 3 MVPs, 3 times.
I mean, it's not going to shock me if he gets a 4th. Denver's off to a bit of a slow start, but I still think they'll be a factor. But they beat the Warriors last night. Steve Kerr was just incensed because it looked like a Denver player called a timeout that they didn't have, but they didn't give him credit for it at the end. Hell of a bass. You know, in markets like that, like I was thinking, you know, the Broncos played. We had Nikki Javala on the show yesterday. She's great, and she had covered the Broncos for several years in Denver. And Scott was there the other night for SportsCenter for the Monday Night Countdown show, and I was talking to him yesterday, and I said, what was that stadium? What was that crowd like? And he just told me, he said, it's incredible. He's like, those fans are so into it. He said the venue is incredible. I don't think he had been there before, but he said the fans were phenomenal. The game was great Monday night. But you know, Nikki talked about, you know, the passionate Denver fan base. Man, when you have a team that is a contender, you know, even in football season, and they care about the Broncos number one. You get a game like last night, it's a packed house, it's a fevered pitch. Like, we just don't have anything like that here. And haven't for so long. You know, even the teams with Wall and Beal and Gortat and Nene and Ariza and Pierce and, you know, the teams that were, you know, winning 40s and then nearly 150 in 2017, you didn't have the intensity of some of these regular season games. It happened in the playoffs, I felt like. But, man, you know, on a early December Tuesday night in Denver, that place was awesome. And they've got a football team that's killing it right now at the same time. I just sat there. The game was great. But I thought, man, if the Wizards were ever what the Nuggets are right now, with a superstar player like Jokic, you know, on their team. I mean, if you had a Giannis or if you had, you know, an Anthony Edwards right now, it would be, I mean, it would be for me, for people who love basketball, it would be awesome. All right, what's next?
Well, speaking of basketball, your Turtles in action tonight. They open up Big Ten play with Ohio State, tip off at 6:30, which, I mean, here, that's way too early.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to complain about start times. I mean, I understand the issue. Big Ten has multiple TV games, you know, when they get into the Big Ten schedule for sure, and you do two Big Ten games here early in December. And, you know, you can't put Maryland as the late start for every single game. It's not what, you know, we understand. Maryland, of the Big Ten teams, well, not now because you have Los Angeles, obviously, with SC and UCLA. LA, but they are in the, you know, before LA entered the conference, they're in the biggest market by far and the biggest traffic situation market, and 6:30 starts are bad. But you know what? If you're really good, and I think Maryland's got a chance to be really good this year, it should be a good crowd. Ohio State early in the season beat Texas. They lost to Pitt at the buzzer the other night. Pitt's pretty good. And so Terps are 5.5-point favorites. You can listen to the game right here, 6:30 tip. 6 o'clock pregame?
6 o'clock pregame. The reason they are early is they got a triple header tonight.
Yeah.
You got Ohio State, Maryland, Michigan State, Minnesota, and then Oregon and USC.
And I think what, you know, what you would say is if you're Maryland, you'd fight for that 8:30 start in a swap with Minnesota. The Big Ten's very aware of the issue Maryland has with being a school right off the Beltway in what is either the second or third worst traffic city in the United States. And so a 6:30 start is hard for a lot of people. But what you'll see, and you've typically seen with the 6:30 starts in College Park, is you see a very late arriving kind of LA-like crowd, where by the second half, it's great. But this is a big stretch for the Terps. They play Ohio State in College Park tonight, and then on Sunday at noon at Purdue. Huge game. Purdue's ranked 8th in the country. And, you know, these two games will tell us a lot about where they are right now. Where they are right now, if you don't know, they're 7-1. They have annihilated everybody except for they had a 1-point win over Villanova, and they had a very close loss against Marquette, who is a top 15 team at home. And, you know, Lunardi's latest bracketology has Maryland, you know, as a 10 seed, you know, in the field safely, kind of safely. Long way to go. But they've got, you know, Ohio State, Purdue, and then they've got a Syracuse team who I don't know is if they're that good on the 21st of December. So a couple of, you know, couple of real games for Maryland and real measuring stick games. I've already mentioned, if you haven't heard me mention it, Derek Queen is the real deal. 5-star. He's looks like a one-and-doneer, very much so. I mentioned Jokic early a little while ago. That's his style. I'm not saying he's the next Jokic. He's not this, like, sick athlete. He is a really high-level, high IQ, great hands, great feet, faces, can back you down, great passer, can shoot it, can score around the rim kind of a player. He's really special, and they got some really good players. Kevin Willard did a phenomenal job in the portal and did a really good job bringing in Derek Queen as a freshman. So go Terps tonight.
Did you see the new documentary trailer that Netflix dropped? It's for the Aaron Rodgers Enigma documentary. It's going to detail his journey in the NFL, but really focus on last season, first year in New York, coming back from the Achilles injury, and also his spiritual journey, which is a way of them saying they're going to show him doing ayahuasca, which kind of feels counterintuitive to what ayahuasca is filming the process, but that's neither here nor there. They didn't ask for my opinion, but I'm fascinated by this. I think this is going to be a very raw look at Aaron Rodgers, and I'm intrigued to see how ridiculous he is.
You tell me if it's worth watching. I can't generate much interest in him right now. I've said this a million times this year. He was not the number one issue as to why the Jets fell apart in terms of playing on the field. Really a disappointing season for a team that was awesome defensively last year and hasn't been this year. Now, you know, the leadership stuff, the, you know, arranging of the chairs, the deck chairs on what's become the Titanic in the NFL is part him, no doubt. I don't know. You and I talked about this the other day. I don't have much interest in watching this. If you tell me it's really well done, I like when things are well done, even if I'm not super interested in the subject. We talked the other day. I think he's going to play next year. I don't know if it'll be in New York. I could see him going wherever Belichick goes. If Belichick goes somewhere.
Belichick would hate coaching him.
I don't know. I've heard Belichick say a lot of interesting things about Aaron Rodgers and when in some of these things. We haven't talked a lot about that this year. You know, he's done that. It used to be the HBO show that's now on something else.
It's like Inside the NFL.
Inside the NFL. He's excellent on that show. He's excellent with McAfee when he's on. He's excellent on the Manning cast. You know, there's actually a lot that you kind of, when you listen to him talk, you just learn a lot. I think he did say recently he doesn't think that Aaron Rodgers is done. It's a bad season for his team, not necessarily a career ender. So we'll see. But as far as the Netflix show, I haven't even watched Receiver yet. I want to go back and watch that because I heard that was great.
I've watched one episode. I haven't watched that. One final thing. Spotify Wrapped dropped today. I know the Apple version of that. I don't use Apple Music, but I know the Apple version dropped earlier this week. If we're on your Spotify Wrapped, if the Kevin Sheehan show is, let us know. I think it's really cool that a bunch of people are listening to us, and I got my top podcasts. This show is not on it because I don't listen to work when I leave work, but
That would be weird. As the producer of this show, you should be listening to this show
24/7. I listen while I'm here.
Well, you're not listening to it from a consumer, from a listener standpoint. You're listening to it from a production standpoint. You should always go back and listen to the shows you produce. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I go back and listen to every single one of my shows. I don't. But when I was first, you know, doing this many, many years ago, I would definitely go back and listen because there was a lot to learn. And there still is. The Spotify Wrap thing, is that like... I think I get that. I do get that on Spotify. It's where they basically hit you with the things that you've listened to the most in 2024.
Yeah, you get like your top artist, top podcast, top song, top five artists, top five songs, top five podcasts. It's all that.
Right. Yeah. Is it out already?
Yeah, so it dropped today. Spotify's dropped today. I think Apple's dropped either yesterday or on Monday. So if we're on yours, let us know. Tweet us, tag us in a picture. We'd love to see it.
I don't have mine. I'm looking at mine right now. It's not up yet. I'm looking for it.
If you're on Spotify, it's like a tab at the top. It says Wrapped, and I think it's like...
Oh, there it is.
Yeah,
okay.
So you go through the whole video.
All right. What else?
That's all we got for news.
All right. We'll do five burning NFL questions when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
They're hot. They're really hot. They're burning. It's Denton's five burning questions.
All right, what do you got for me?
All right, question number one. Are we seeing the real Russell Wilson, or is this going to fade at some point?
Ooh, good one. So I would say that we are seeing a new Russell Wilson. A Russell Wilson who essentially was given ground rules for... how he was going to be, not just on the field, but how he was going to be as part of a team and a locker room. You know, no more entourages, no more separate facilities, no more diva, which we understand now as football fans was a big part of why Seattle wanted to move on from him and why Sean Payton wanted to move on from him. Mike Tomlin doesn't play around with that. And so I think you have to credit him. You credit Pittsburgh, but you credit him for saying fine, you know, and evolving to a certain degree, because he's not doing that. From what we've heard, he is part of that team. He is really trying to be a leader, not just when he's in the huddle, but throughout the organization. By the way, part of that is mentoring Justin Fields. Look at the interactions between the two of them. In terms of his play, we talked about this last year. Remember, there were a couple of games last year when Denver got onto a roll after starting very poorly. I mean, he went to Buffalo and led two fourth quarter drives, or you know, something like that, two second half drives to beat the Bills on Monday Night Football. He is still excellent, as Dan Quinn would say, on part two of a play. You know, he's great and always has been great at extending and making plays. Good for him to change and adapt. I don't think he had a choice. Mike Tomlin would have said thank you very little and moved on. And, you know, part of that, it takes a coach like Mike Tomlin to say, no, you're going to do it our way. And if you want to do it our way, we think you still got something left. I think we might be seeing not just a one-off from Russell Wilson. I don't know why you wouldn't bring him back if he ends up leading them to a division title.
All right, question number two. Do the Panthers move forward next year with Bryce Young?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, are you going to draft somebody that you're that sure of? Unless you decide to, you know, essentially bring in a whole new group and change out Canales. And he's played really well here the last couple of weeks. And he's grown, and you got to give this position time. Bryce Young, his biggest, you know, negative is his size. He is not a tall quarterback, and we know what the data says historically about quarterbacks under 6 feet. I mean, it's very rare that they end up being super successful over a sustained period of time. But man, watching him, and I watched that a little bit of that fourth quarter and overtime on Sunday, he really still, just like at Bama, Denton, he's still great inside that pocket. He's great at extending. He sees it. He's smart. Yeah, I would say yes, that you've seen glimpses of what he can be. And look, Canales got the best out of Baker Mayfield last year, got the best out of Geno Smith the year before. So I'd give Canales and Bryce Young some more time.
All right, we got to go rapid fire for these final three. Number three, who is the biggest fraud right now in the NFL?
The biggest fraud.
Give me a player or a team.
How about the, I just am not a believer in the Houston Texans.
I was going to say the same thing.
We've both been saying this for a while. There's just something not right there. And it's not Stroud, you know, and it's not Mixon, and it's not Collins, and it's not, you know, some of their playmakers. They got an offensive line problem. Yeah, there's something, I mean, they barely beat the Jags. They barely beat the, you know, they lost to the Jets. They're going to win that division. I don't see them winning a playoff game.
Is the Mike McDaniel experience over in Miami?
It might be. The reports were when they got into the locker room Thanksgiving night at Lambeau, he went right to the heater and was standing next to the heater. He was shivering calling plays. And a player on the Dolphins, and I forget who it was, said, "We're not built for this. We're too soft." And somebody else anonymously said, "Our coach was colder than anybody. He could barely call plays."
Not great.
Yeah, it might be. But let's face it. They're a completely different team in warm weather and with Tua at quarterback. What's your last one?
It's crazy. He grew up in Denver, too, or outside of Denver. You would think he'd be used to it. Final one. Will San Francisco blow it up this season, this offseason?
I think the question really is, if they were to blow it up, does that mean looking for a new quarterback? Or are they going to pay Brock Purdy? or has the price for Purdy come way down? I say they don't blow it up completely. I mean, they just paid, you know, a receiver who got injured, Naiyuk. They've just been injured. I think they run it back. I think they run it back next year, and they figure out something with Brock Purdy that doesn't make him, you know, at a level of an elite quarterback. What do you think?
I think they move on from, at least I think we might have seen the last of Christian McCaffrey in San Francisco, and I bet they probably move on from Deebo Samuel too.
Yeah, that's right. They've got to pay Deebo also. Good point. All right, up next, Bobby Carpenter. He works with Denton at XM, at Sirius XM, college football analyst, former college football player, good one, really good one at Ohio State, played for the Cowboys. He'll join us next. We'll talk college football rankings.